The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Ali Moreno will be here to reflect on Atleti's 1-1 draw with Real Madrid and the significance of that result regarding La Liga title race. We'll start, though, in the Premier League. Some big results today. Spurs beating Crystal Palace. Liverpool losing once again, this time at home against Fulham. But we'll kick things off with Manchester United's 2-0 victory away against Manchester City. Let's welcome in, shall we, Nader Manua and Frank LaBeouf. Nader, what happened to your boys?
I guess they're not perfect. You know, it's just, it's one of those things. As an old-style City fan, I had this nagging doubt in the back of my head that no matter how well City are doing, derby games are just different. And I think United proved that today. Obviously, the early goal helps an awful lot. But, you know, days like this can happen. And I think for City, it's just about the reaction. And thankfully for them, they've got a game on Wednesday to try and get back into that winning momentum.
It's a cliche, Frank. Form book goes out the window. But you think, but no, it shouldn't, because these are still the same teams. This is still a Manchester City side who've won all those games in a row, 28 games unbeaten. Manchester United come into this game, goalless draws galore. How do you explain this? How did United get it done?
Well, they work hard and they work on the best way they and the thing they know what to do is defending. And they had the chance to score very, very early and then defending. Everybody and especially the Red Devil fans could have been scared for the last 30 minutes of the first half. But they held it well and they had the chance to score another goal from Shaw. They had a perfect game. Not too many chances, but very solid at the back. And it was hard for City to go around and to even create some chances. They did second half, like three times, but not enough to scare the Red Devils.
Nadim, how much credit does Solskjaer get for this win?
Yeah, I think he deserves a lot. But then also, you look at last season, and I think they beat City three times then as well. So clearly he knows how to get his team up for that game. He knows how to set up his team for that game. And even though the talk beforehand was the fact that they've not scored against, you know, some of the traditional big six, I think the clean sheets they were having were very significant, because now, you know, they find themselves with an early lead against City and they're confident. They've beaten them, as we can see there, so many times in the last couple of years. So why would you go and play against City and fear them? No matter what City are doing, they still always have the belief that they can go and get a result. And, you know, they did that again today. And I think overall, it pains me to say it, but they probably deserve the result.
Nathan, just from an outsider looking in, what you're saying makes absolutely no sense. I get that I get that history has shown us that Solskjaer has taken United to City and got results. But even though he's done it in the past, that really shouldn't have any significance in that game today, should it, given the form of the two sides going into this clash?
I think let's be clear here. So it's a derby game. There's always that little bit extra to it. And for that game itself, it's just about winning that particular thing. As far as momentum goes and things that come into it, then yes, you can be more confident and so on. But I played in six derby games and I won three. And I won three as a significant underdog. So what does that mean? Because we're playing against the great Manchester United sides at Old Trafford and things like this. I think that's the beauty of the game itself. Even though we can expect results to come in, the fact of the matter is, if they always came in, we'd probably stop watching because we know what to expect. But for Manchester United, you know, they have confidence. It's 11v11 and City were faced with a different task this time, because for the first time in 20 games, they conceded first. And now they're up against a team where you've seen overall in the big games, they don't concede a lot of goals. And as I say, it led to a point where basically United ultimately were comfortable with hitting City on the break, and people on the field for them from one all the way through to the 11 were committed to defending properly, and they did that and they were rewarded.
What will other teams learn from this victory for Manchester United when they face Manchester City, Frank?
Well, I will be a coach for many other teams who's going to confront Manchester United. I will drop back and I will wait for them to lead the game and play in counter-attack, because that's the way we know they're not comfortable with. They're very good. They're very expert on counter-attacking, especially with Martial, Rashford, James, who are very, very fast. If you drop back, just wait for them to lead the game, I think you're going to create problem because they don't like it. And play counter-attack because they're pretty much slow at the back with Maguire or Lindelof, for example, is going to be a problem for them. So the only thing you can learn from them is the fact that giving them the ball can be an advantage for yourself.
Looking at this Manchester City side, they're still going to win the Premier League. That's fine. That's wrapped up. But obviously their focus is the Champions League. How much of a concern is this sort of performance going into the latter stages of the knockout rounds, given what we saw today and given what we've seen in the past, haven't we, in the Champions League and their failings there?
Yeah, I think Pep's described it very well because he said, I think in the game against West Ham, he thought that they didn't play well, but they still managed to find a result. So he is aware as far as like results were very, very positive, but not every performance was as good as it could have been. I think even in the game against Gladbach, there was a chance for Gladbach with the last kick of the game, and that could have taken the game to 2-1, and you know they've got a different task in 10 days' time. So as far as the Champions League goes, obviously this shows that they're not a perfect side, but I think the people in their building know that they're not anyway. I think if they were just getting caught up in their own hype and so on, I'd be more concerned. But for the way that Pep is as a manager, and I think most of those players are, I think this type of loss here is the type of thing which maybe springboards them in terms of improving their performances overall. It might not necessarily guarantee results, but what they felt today in that derby game has been essentially humbling because everybody said they were favourites to do so and they didn't perform. But I don't think that's something that's going to spread throughout the team and continue for the rest of the season. So as far as the Champions League goes, I think Pep's going to be more prepared. I think the players are going to be more motivated. And it wouldn't surprise me if some of the best performances come between now and the end of the year.
So no concern, Nathan, for lack of a better word, with them, that faffing that we see, the overcomplication in the final third.
Listen, they can faff all they want, but the fact is, you know, they're still joint. I think they're top scorers in the Premier League. So there is some level of substance there. Obviously, as well, you know, United did very well today because they were clinical. Even though they had fewer shots, they end up with the same amount of shots on target. So that's credit to them. And I think at times City can be a little bit wasteful. But I think on a different day, if City are more clinical, if they don't have the start that they do, then I think today ends up being a more comfortable game for them and they probably end up with a better result. So all the tippy-tappy stuff, it's only a problem when they don't win. But for the previous 21 games, I didn't really hear many complaints about it. So I'm on to you, Dan. I'm on to you. I feel like you're a City hater and I'm going to be looking forward to questions.
Oh, yes. I hate everyone, Nathan. All of them. Every single club. Okay. I'm just bitter, angry little man.
I see this.
I hate Liverpool as well and I'm happy that they're losing against everyone at the moment. Fulham, of course, the latest side that went to Anfield and took all 3 points. Frank, I don't even know where to start anymore with this because it has come out of the blue so much. I understand teams have bad runs and it's difficult to defend your titles and Liverpool have a lot of injuries, but goodness me, Liverpool are taking this to the next level, aren't they? Their recent run of form is just diabolical.
Yeah, it's starting to be embarrassing, disturbing, shameful. I don't know what to use, you know, to describe what I feel. Because against Chelsea can happen, against Manchester City, maybe Leicester City, Everton, but Sheffield United, Fulham, even if I think Fulham doesn't deserve to go down, and hopefully they're gonna stay in the Premier League. Something is happening and I don't like it because you can find new excuses, you know, with the pandemic, with the injury, the loss of many central defenders. Today, the setup was different with the two Williams, Phillips, Robertson at the back. No Fabinho, no Henderson, no Sané, at front, and Firmino. So we see Klopp tries to change something, try to change maybe the spirit of it, but it doesn't work. But at the end of the day, the players, they have to stand up and to maybe react themselves. They are professional players. They've been absolutely fantastic for 2 years and now they're collapsing like crazy. No, it's not understandable. We can't forgive them, you know, for the rest of the season. They have to react because, again, you know, they're not going to get anything. We don't talk about the title. We talk about the first, fourth place, maybe Europa League. Maybe that will be something for them because it's becoming very, very bad. and they have to react.
Nadim, take us into that Liverpool locker room. How are they feeling?
That's tough. Considering they were champions last year after the long wait that they've had to endure, then it is crazy. But I think one thing about Liverpool and the way that they're playing right now is I believe it works both ways. Previously, they were a team who hadn't lost at home for 4 years, which is crazy. But the moment Burnley get that victory and then the next team get that victory, teams are going to Anfield and they're almost expecting a result. And that's not something that I think I've seen in my lifetime. And it is crazy to see, but, you know, a drop in confidence in the Premier League or any league at the highest level will more often than not be capitalised by the opposition. And here you're facing a team like Fulham who are desperate to get out of the relegation zone. And then imagine how much sort of, how would I say, not excitement as such, but for Fulham to arrive at Anfield with no fans, to see a wounded Liverpool, and then to see the changes that Klopp makes to the team as well. These are all big boosts. And for as much as Liverpool are trying to find their way, the teams that got to play against them, they're not prepared to give them time. So, you know, we see more and more results like this today.
Nenim, we've talked a lot about the defensive issues, and of course it was another centre-back pairing. But at the other end of the field, that form has dropped off so much, and they have to take a lot of responsibility for this dip as well.
Yeah, they will. I think they will. You know, what we're used to seeing from Liverpool over the past 3-4 years has been exceptional, but what they're going through right now is, you know, I think it just shows how tough the game can be. Just because you've done something in the past doesn't guarantee that anything else is to come. The goals they've scored, their 11 in 14 games, it's not good enough for them. It's not good enough for a side that won the league last year. It's not good enough for a team that's probably going to try and finish in the top four this year. And they need to try and figure that out. Whether or not it's a case of they're not creating as many chances, I'm not sure. Or if it's a case of them being wasteful, but ultimately they know it's not good enough. I think the standards that they set over the past 3 years have only been matched by one team, which was Manchester City overall. Nobody else has touched it, but now they're back in the pack and they're struggling a little bit. And unfortunately, as I say, for them, this league doesn't give you a leg up, doesn't give you a chance to try and figure things out. You just have to find a way, otherwise someone will just find a way to take the points away from you.
How much, Nathan, was that starting lineup affected by the fact that they've got Leipzig midweek? And how much is that an indicator maybe that Klopp is giving up on finishing in the top four?
I don't think Klopp is the type of person to give up, but I was curious when I saw that team, actually, because say someone like Fabinho, for example, who's just come back into the side, he appeared to be rested, and I thought, that's interesting. And with the game against Leipzig, yes, it's a big game, but they do have a lead. Mm. So it's not as if they need to go all guns blazing to try and win that particular game, because if it finishes 0-0, they go through, essentially. So they don't actively need to, you know, to win a game to go through. So when I saw the changes, I'm not sure to put a focus on that again in the Champions League. I'm not sure you're halfway there, and the league is so important. You look around and West Ham are in good run of form, Spurs are in good run of form, Everton are in good run of form. Chelsea, in my opinion, now are probably one of the two best teams in the league at this moment in time. So I don't know. I think he sent them out there knowing that they are capable of winning the game, but then in the same breath, we've seen in the last 2 months they've not got the depth to be able to maintain a high standard of performance. So when you make those changes, it does kind of feel like he's, I don't know, either protecting himself and the team for if they lose because they were the changes, or you could argue, you know, you're getting ready for the Champions League. But the Champions League was a priority even if they were top of the league anyway, to be honest.
What do you think, Frank?
Well, you know, I don't know what's the priority, because, you know, if you keep on losing games, you know, games after game in the Premier League, is going to give you any confidence to win in the Champions League. So I was very surprised to see that setup today. But at the end of the day, you have to try something. I mean, I always said that putting midfielders, you know, in centre-backs like Anderson and Fabinho wasn't maybe the good idea. But do you have the choice? I'm not sure Klopp does. And he tries something else. And so I'm sorry, it's not Sané, it's Mané that I meant before. But we have a problem with the three at front. They're not fully confident, but like the rest of the team. And again, as I always said, you know, if you lose the battle in the middle of the park, you can't expect anything going right offensively and defensively. And that's the main problem for the season. Klopp tried to cope with the situation, putting Fabinho and Anderson at the back, and he lost the battle in the middle of the park. You know, Jones, Thiago Alcantara, Wijnaldum, of course, they're fantastic players, but you need warriors. And the captain, Anderson, is really I mean, for me, the real color of the Reds. He showed rage. He showed everything. And he's a real example. And he played at the back. He didn't play in the middle of the park.
Just last word on this, Nadim. It's Chelsea-Everton tomorrow. Chelsea win that game. They are 7 points clear of Liverpool with 10 matches to go. Is that it for Liverpool's top four hopes, given the chasing pack and the teams that are behind them as well?
You know, you're really good at trying to get me to say something to put me under the bus. So what I will say instead is that, yes, Chelsea would be very heavily favoured should they win that game. Because as it stands, Liverpool have no
form. Oh, we know that, Nadim. Anyone could come on and say that.
So, okay. Let me give you what you want then. Chelsea will finish above Liverpool if they win tomorrow. There you go. I said it enough. Done.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, okay. All right then. Meanwhile, in the late game, Spurs taking on at Crystal Palace, Harry Kane and Gareth Bale very much stealing the show. Nadim, they were brilliant.
Yeah, they really, really were. I think, obviously, they played well and they've hit a real nice run of form. They're both great finishers, really exceptional players, exceptional talents, especially when they get ahead of steam. But I think ultimately, again today as well, to add to that, I think Crystal Palace overall were quite poor. I think Mourinho obviously had some words to say about what happened at half-time and so on, but these are real good goal scorers, putting themselves in key areas, trying to affect the game. You can see that the confidence is high. Like, that's such a great finish. And that's ultimately what you can, you know, something that doesn't even surprise you in terms of what Harry Kane can do. But as I say, they're confident. And I think this is a prime example of a team where they have confidence. They can do anything to anybody, because it wasn't too long ago I watched them against Man City and they were good for maybe the first 10, 15 minutes. Then after that, it looked like they had nothing. But then to see them play like they are playing now, I think it's what people expected. I think people probably expected them to be further up the table at this point, pushing for the top four, maybe even pushing for a title run. But, you know, they found the form eventually, but it's just a shame that it's a bit too late for them, I'd say.
Yeah, Nadim, you have to bring Manchester City into every conversation. Frank, you take a look at this and you look at the way in which they're playing, and it's a complete opposite from what we were discussing about Liverpool. These are players who clearly are enjoying every single minute on the pitch and growing with confidence with every game.
They are, and I have to give credit to Mourinho on what he did on the about Gareth Bale, you know, because we were wondering why Gareth Bale was on the bench all the time, and when Mourinho decided to launch him, since that he's been absolutely fantastic. So credit for Mr. Mourinho on that case, but David on the fact that when everything was lost, that he had nothing to do, he decided to play offensively. And we found Spurs' spirit back from yesterday. And what they do for the past games is absolutely entertaining, fantastic, and they get results. And we enjoy seeing the three at front, giving assists to the others, scoring goals. And we see an entertaining Spurs team. They do what we expect from those people who are really gifted to play offensive football and play for 6 months defensively, for thinking that they could get something and at the end of the day, wasting points.
How do you explain the Gareth Bale situation, Nadim?
Oh, he's back to me again. From what I heard earlier in the season, Gareth Bale wasn't quite at full match sharpness. I think he was doing stuff in training, but I heard he had some issues in terms of how he was shooting and stuff because he wasn't quite there yet. So I think a significant part of the early part of the season, he wasn't ready to play, and the Gareth Bale we see now wouldn't have been possible back then. And then the way that the team was playing and so on, I think Mourinho had an idea, had a strategy, and he wanted to stick with it. But we have to give credit, because the last time we were talking about Mourinho and Bale, they were having an issue because Bale was allegedly injured, Mourinho said he wasn't, and so on and so forth. But they've managed the relationship, either made it a working one or an even bigger, more positive one. Because now I see Gareth Bale on the pitch looking very, very comfortable. And Mourinho being very, very happy putting him out there to find success for the team. And it's not changed the way that the team ultimately have had to try and play, because now he fits the system, he suits the system. And it's crazy to see a Mourinho team being really attacking and offensive and so on. But, you know, as long as it's not in the League Cup final, I'm more than happy to see it.
There it is again. Good.
What's going on? League Cup final, who's playing?
Yeah, who's in the League Cup final?
Sorry.
On the Bale point, the narrative is easy to sell, isn't it? Mourinho brought him in from Real Madrid. He wasn't up to standard. And then he obviously brought him back to the Gareth Bale that we know. But it's taken a very long time. And you could almost counter that argument saying, well, maybe Jose Mourinho was just stubborn and didn't want him in the side. And in the end, he had no choice, Nadim.
Trust in your manager. Believe in his decisions. I didn't hear any pressure from Daniel Levy. Didn't hear him saying anything. Mourinho has to play him. There was no real outrage from anybody else, but the time has come and Gareth Bale can be at his best. Because I think if he went into the side and he wasn't anywhere near his fitness, then we'd probably see the stats that we saw from before February, where he wasn't really contributing to games. But now that he's ready to go, his fitness is better, his health is better. You know, you can see the Gareth Bale, which a lot of people probably dreamed of seeing back in the Premier League. Obviously, it's not as good as he was when he first left, or say from his peak at Real Madrid. But that step down still puts him probably ahead of 95% of players in the league. So trust in Mourinho. He knew what he was doing. It took a while, but he's in there and they're getting results.
Gentlemen, thank you very much, Nadim. Before you change into your Manchester City pyjamas, you'll be back for extra time a little later on in the show with Frank. Just a reminder, that game on Monday, Chelsea taking on Everton, a huge chance for Thomas Tuchel's side to really solidify their place in the top four. They are 2-1 on to take all 3 points. Everton meanwhile, at 11-2.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Getting interesting in La Liga after Real Madrid's 1-1 draw against Atletico Madrid. What a game it was. Atleti, much better side in the first half. Beautiful finish from Luis Suarez would give them the lead. Controversy just before the break. Real Madrid felt they should have had a penalty. Would have been harsh, I think, to have given it against the handball in the box from Atleti. Second half, Real Madrid better. They get the equaliser through Karim Benzema late on. For more on this, let's welcome in Ali Moreno to the show. Ali, I want to start with Luis Suarez.
It's a good place to start. It certainly is a good place to start when you consider how important he has been for Atletico Madrid. The truth of the matter is about Atletico Madrid, if Luis Suarez is not scoring, you don't know where the goals are going to come from. That's what we have seen over the last month or so. He went cold for a little while. The Atletico Madrid was struggling to get chances. And today, what we saw from Luis Suarez, his ability to finish. And I think also what we saw from Atletico Madrid that I thought surprised Zinedine Zidane, in fact, surprised everybody who was not in that locker room, is the willingness right after the first minute for Atletico Madrid to actually play higher up the field, to take the game to Real Madrid, to actually pressure Real Madrid. And from that pressure is where that first goal comes from, because your starting line is higher. That allows Marco Llorente to run into channels, to run in behind. It forces Nacho to come out of his defensive position. Nacho doesn't get to the ball. Llorente is now attacking in a 2v1 situation against Varane. And then Luis Suarez, you see the movement of the ball getting in behind. And as you just mentioned, the finish from Luis Suarez that was just so tasty, so delicious, so calm and so beautifully taken. Just Luis Suarez again. He was outstanding in that finish, but they could have used more of those finishes from Luis Suarez, because I have to tell you, Atletico Madrid had opportunities in the second half. Then Thibaut Courtois came up with save, and you gave Real Madrid a chance.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Because Atleti had their chances to bury the game, to seal the 3 points, but then they just let Real Madrid get back into it. Benzema with that opportunity late on. Oblak making the save, and you thought, well, that's it. That's Real Madrid's chance. But with Benzema up front, he will always give you that opportunity for goals.
Yes, he will. And I think there was a solution to the problem posted by Diego Simeone that Zinedine Zidane had to come up with. And he had to sort of figure out, okay, what do I do now? Because my midfield, my strength is now being outplayed from Atletico Madrid because we're being outnumbered. And Ferreira Carrasco is creating all sorts of problems from us. So what did Zidane do? Well, okay, I'm going to put out there a guy who's going to match the athleticism of Ferreira Carrasco. And in doing that, he puts out there Federico Valverde. And now the matchup in the midfield was more to the liking of Real Madrid. And just as we mentioned about Simeone surprising Zidane, we also have to mention that Simeone went sort of back to his roots. In reacting to that substitution to Valverde, what does he do? Instead of staying on the front foot, he took a step back and he became a little bit more defensive. And that's all it took for Real Madrid to start creating some opportunities, have chances here and there. And the actual goal from Benzema comes from a little bit of a touch and tackle, kind of a 1-2 situation. But look at the numbers around Benzema at the moment that he starts to play. There's so many Atletico Madrid players and nobody actually sticks a tackle. Nobody gets to the ball. Nobody able to get to Benzema or Casemiro for that matter. And in the end, it's a tap in from Benzema. 1-1 and Barcelona rejoices.
Penalty, Ali?
I think so.
Really?
And I know you said it would be incredibly harsh, but what I would suggest is that, and I think that the thing that I kept going back to is, if he doesn't touch this ball with his arm away from his body, does that ball get to Casemiro? And is he facing goal about 5 yards out all by himself? And the answer to that is yes. So he impedes the progress of the play of Real Madrid and the play of potentially Casemiro getting on the end of the cross. That's the part in which I think it's a penalty. And I give it the credit to VAR, though. They did say to the referee, hey, you got to take a look at this. And now what's up to the referee? Go see the play once again. He saw it time and time again, the same replays that we were seeing. He evaluated. He had his own interpretation. Hernandez, the referee. I disagree with interpretation. I think it was a penalty. But at the very least, we went through the right process to get to the decision.
His parents really like the name Gonzalez. Finally, Ali, who wins La Liga?
Oh, man, that is tough. That is rough. And I knew you were going to ask this.
Yep.
So I was ready for this.
I know,
this
unpredictable.
Answer, or was I? The truth of the matter is, I have no idea. I have no idea. I would have thought if Atletico Madrid closes this out, then yes, we're back to where we were a few weeks ago, where it's Atletico Madrid and everybody else. Now there's momentum from Barcelona. And now what happens between Atletico Madrid and Athletic Bilbao in the midweek may just set up for a nice real finish. Because here's the thing. Atletico Madrid, they still have to play Sevilla. They still have to play Barcelona. But then Barcelona has to play Real Madrid. It all becomes a big mess. But now you have teams that are in a race that were not there 3 weeks ago. Barcelona is very much in this race. I thought they were done after they drew against Cadiz. No, they're back in it, and they may just be the real threat for Atletico Madrid.
Well, they're a real threat that has a new president. Joan Laporta voted in today, back after his 7-year reign from 2003 to 2010. He's welcoming Gab Marcotti to the show. Gab, what is the significance of this?
Well, it's significant because in some ways, depending who you choose to believe, of course, Laporta was there when Barcelona were restored to glory, when they won the European Cup back in 2006. And obviously, he was there when the whole Pep Guardiola movement started with Messi, although it didn't necessarily end well. It didn't necessarily end well with the relationship between him and Messi either wasn't necessarily optimal. Certainly not great with Pep, some people say. But I think in some ways it's a choice of kind of going back to the past and hoping this will help things calm down at the club. You're talking about a club that has, what, like $1.3 billion worth of debt, of which, more than $800 million is short-term debt, which is going to come due very soon. So these are some of the things that Laporta is going to have to deal with. And of course, the biggest call of all is what to do with Lionel Messi. What do you offer him? How much do you push the boat out to get him to stay? Is his decision already made up? These are all questions to which we don't have the answer right now.
Well, I'm going to ask you anyway, Gab. It's tough. You're going to have to answer them. We saw Messi voting, didn't we? And he doesn't normally vote. He's not normally here for the elections. Make a big deal about it as well. Put it on social media. Made no secret about it. I'm going to ask you who you voted for, and you're going to tell me you obviously don't know because it's a secret ballot. But overall, of the three, would you guess that this would be his preference?
People have speculated that. That would be him, possibly Victor Font. I would hope it's not Tony Freixa, the guy who was talking about, oh, yeah, if I get elected, you know, we can sign three world-class players, you know, maybe Haaland and Mbappe and maybe somebody else at the back. No, you can't do that. I mean, Barcelona fans have to realize that a lot of things went very wrong. Some of it has to do with the previous administration with Bartomeu. Some of it is the pandemic. Some of it is sheer bad luck. And I think Messi understands that. The question is, does Messi want to be part of the rebuild? How quickly can they come back? Personally, I look at this and, you know, I look at Ter Stegen, I look at De Jong, I look at Pedri, I look at Elias, I look at the season Jordi Alba is having, and I'm not sure they're that far away if Messi sticks around. So I think Laporta's going to have to be smart on this one. And I think the way you put a number on what Messi is worth to you and what you think he can contribute, and you go to him and you say, look, this is how far we can go. We really want you here. We think you want to be here. It's a new season. It's a new president. It's a new club. But, you know, we can't go any further than this. And if you don't take it, then all of a sudden, a big chunk of your wage bill is gone and you've relieved some of the financial pressure on the club. If he sticks around and gives you that hometown discount that you're hoping for, hey, even better, you've got Messi. They're showing that this season, with the injuries, with everything they have, I didn't even mention Ansu Fati before, you know, they're right up there competing for the title. And what is a strange season? Sure, but they're up there, they're in the final of the Copa del Rey. Imagine what they can do in a more settled situation without those injuries. So, you know, I think there's a lot for Laporta to try to sell Messi on, to try to persuade him to stay.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Let's focus on Italy now, shall we? Gab's still with us as we reflect on a good day for AC Milan, winning 2-0 away against Verona. Matteo Bonetti joins us as well. Matteo, showed a lot of character today, Milan.
Yeah, they absolutely did against Hellas Verona side, Dan. That's really well drilled under Ivan Juric, takes you away from what you want to do. But it's really the story about the starting lineup, right? Because there's this whole thing, maybe people who haven't followed as closely think Zlatan Ibrahimovic, a goal a game, without him, this isn't the same Milan. He's the main reason why they're where they are. Now, you could make a case in certain games, but if you actually look back at half the games that Zlatan Ibrahimovic missed this season, Milan did just fine. They've struggled with him on the pitch. I'm not saying it's his fault, but in 2021, when they had most or more important players back, is when they were dropping points. In this game, no Theo Hernandez, no Ismail Benacer, no Hakan Çalhanoğlu, no Simon Kjær, no Ibrahimovic. The list goes on and on. Ante Rebic. And they played very well. This was mostly the rotation players. About half the usual starters were missing. And to put this performance against an Hellas Verona side that has taken points against the big boys in Serie A, I think was a huge win, putting even more pressure tomorrow on Inter against Atalanta in what's going to be a really tricky fixture.
Yeah, big statement today, Gab.
Huge statement. And look, say it softly, I think Matteo danced around it there, but Milan's points per game average is actually higher without Zlatan than with Zlatan. Now, obviously, it's not a binary situation, but when they're without him, when they have Rafael Leao up front, when the haters shut up and stop saying, Rafael Leao is not a center forward, what's he doing? And they play fast and they play with intensity, they can go and they can certainly beat up teams like Verona and I think bigger teams as well.
A big statement from AC Milan, of course, a big statement from Juventus yesterday, coming from behind to beat Lazio, the front page of Gazzetta. Juve Morata sings. Well, on yesterday's show, the new addition to ESPN FC, Juve legend Alessandro Del Piero was on. And I asked him about Juve's transition year under Pirlo and how patient fans would be with it.
First of all, there's no transition year for Juventus at all. Every year you need to win, you must to win. And by the way, Juve won last month the Super Cup. So it's already a trophy on the stand of the club. But the trophy that they want, the fans want, is the Champions League. Mm. So now after 9 straight consecutive Cup League winning, it's kind of, you know, another Italian Cup, another Italian League winning. Boring, kind of that, right? So the Champions League is the most important target for everyone, including fans. They are passions, yes, because they know Pirlo is a new adventure. So it needs time to adjust what's going on. And it's a change of a last minute during the preseason. So it's not easy putting a new guy with no experience like him, but super smart to in this situation. But they are patient now, but they're waiting on Tuesday.
Is this squad good enough to win the whole Champions League this season?
That is a very good question. It's tough to answer because for what is showing the Champions League, the answer is, it's good, but they still have a lot of problems. Mm. And how much they can solve those problems and how fast they can solve their problem is the real answer, because they are missing all the defense now. They didn't find the right chemistry on the midfielders, but they are amazing potential, you know. And with that guy in the front, you know, they can score every game, one or two goals, everything is possible.
Is Pirlo the right man for the job going forward?
Oh, this is... Pirlo is an amazing guy, is super smart, and he embraced the project, you know, super fast. But yes, definitely no experience. So it's a kind of bad for Juventus, you know. But the structure of the club, the structure of the team with the key men inside the team as players is very strong. So they helped him till now, and they keep going together. Mm. So they become, you know, a full team. And this is really good, you know, when you are to reach some kind of level that you need everything that you have inside to perform well.
Alessandro Del Piero, thank you very much. Before I let you go, just turn around your camera and show me what you were showing me before of all the lights and all the people and everyone there trying to make this work.
Yeah, listen, it's 2 hours that they're trying to make it work and... I'm happy to do it.
Everyone,
we have lights everywhere.
Okay, look at this.
You know, 1, 2.
Everyone trying to make you look beautiful.
We have 4 people working. Yeah. Big lights. Cameras that was ready and connect. I don't know if you see it.
Yep.
You know, with the guys, you know.
That didn't
all
work.
The cables.
Yep.
You know, and nothing worked. At the end of the day, you know, an old way through a phone, and yep, we make it work.
In the home,
next time, yep, we will start the day before.
Yes,
so
exactly.
We'll be ready for tonight.
Exactly. Gabby Mate, meanwhile, alone in their houses. Let's just confirm how Juve and where they are this season. Third in the league, of course, through to the round of 16. That huge game against Porto, we'll talk about that in a moment. Final of the Coppa Italia, champions, as Ali mentioned, of the Italian Super Cup. Gab, there's no such thing as a transitional season for Juventus.
Yeah, that's what Juve people are taught to say and to repeat endlessly. Fortunately, I'm not a Juventino, so I don't have to say that. Unlike Ale Del Piero, who is, you know, captain of the side, played for them 500 odd times, if not more. That this is whatever they say, this is a transition season. Obviously, they still have tremendous players, they're tremendous teams, but it's not some sort of binary equation where all of a sudden, you know, we need to win, and we don't win, and so therefore, we're going to chuck the baby out with the bathwater. That's not what it means. And I think, you know, when you take a step back, when you look at what Fabio Paratici is trying to get the club to do, they believe that this is the right path. And as I've said many times, it might not be Pirlo who takes you there, but they're moving in the right direction.
So I understand, Gab, the pretty picture that you're painting. However, there would be a massive blot on that picture if they don't get past Porto this week.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you know, before you talked about how wonderful their victory over Lazio was, I thought the first 20 minutes, and not just because they gifted Lazio the goal, I thought they were absolutely terrible. Mm. And I agree with you. You go out in the round of 16, it's a massive blow, especially knowing how you lost that first leg, and you only have yourself to blame. So I think these are all important points. I think they have to go through. I think that's why Cristiano didn't start against Lazio, to make sure that he's fresh. He played every game midweek and weekend, I think, since the beginning of January. But that said, I think what's really encouraging here is they show that, you know, they can beat Lazio without Cristiano, and that is a big step forward in terms of having faith in their own abilities. And also, they can deal with a bunch of absences. He can go and play Alexandro and at center back. He can play Danilo in midfield. He can play Bernardeschi at left back in a four, and they can still win. And I think I think all of these things build the confidence. Of course, it could all go out the window if they get hammered by Porto.
And this is why it's such a crucial game on Tuesday, Matteo.
Yeah, it is, and nothing from the first game would really make me feel great if I was a Juventino. And just looking at this one from a neutral perspective, I think the first leg was one of the worst games of football that I can remember watching this season. It was just like it was played in slow motion, and they're probably going to be without Giorgio Chiellini and Matthijs de Ligt on Tuesday as well. So just going back to what Gab was saying about transition year. If you say as a club, oh, we're in a rebuild, we're in a transition, it's almost like making an excuse, which you obviously can't make with the players that they have, the money that they've gone on to spend, including so much money that they have to structure all these crazy signings where they're only paying for players in little chunks this year, next year, the year after that, because they can't just spend it all at once. So this would be, Dan, a massive failure to not only go out against Porto in the round of 16, but to become to stay in third place. And I don't think they're going to win the Scudetto. I think Inter are the favorites after nine consecutive seasons, when that is the big objective, bringing in Ronaldo. You need luck and all that. Great, I get it. But we have not seen a cohesive side from Juventus that can deliver a similar sort of end result from week to week, all season long. Every few weeks, something completely different. And it isn't about the injuries, because every team has suffered injuries. Every team's had COVID cases. Every team has been turned upside down this whole season from week to week because of the element of randomness of COVID that you don't know when it's going to hit, because of the congested calendar. There's no real excuses, though. They should have done better. And going into the second leg where Porto can just sit on the lead.
What would it take for Pirlo not to be there next season, Gab?
I think they would have to be convinced that he can't take them to the next level. But as I've told you many times, even if Pirlo moves on, even if they think Pirlo's not right, even if relationships break down with certain people within the team, the next manager is going to be a Pirlo type, is going to be somebody progressive who tries to go and play the way Pirlo has been playing. Maybe he does a better job of it. But I think it's as simple as that. And that's really what Matteo said about, well, if you say it's a transition year, you know, yeah, they spent a lot of money in the summer, but they spent money on long-term players. They spent money on people like Chiesa, people like Weston McKennie, people like Morata, who, you know, it's not like the guy's 35 years old. In the past, they were always looking for last piece of the puzzle, bringing in at great expense in terms of wages, people like Ramsey, like Matuidi, and whatever else. Now they're going in a different direction. So I think they can actually live with saying it's a transition year, because everybody knows it's a transition year, because if it was not a transition year, you wouldn't have made the signings that you made, and you wouldn't have appointed Pirlo as your manager.
Who goes through, Matteo?
I think Juventus find a way, I'll be honest. I think that at home, against a side that really isn't that impressive when you actually look at them on paper, Juventus should find a way. I feel like they have the necessary experience and players that have been in the biggest moment, especially up top. And I'm just worried about what happens when they face one of the truly top sides in Europe in this competition.
So, Gab, if Matteo says Juventus, you then surely have to say Porto.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work that way this time. No, look, I think they will advance. And I'll tell you what, though. If you look at where Juventus's run has ended in past years in Europe and who it's ended against and how it and how things fell apart, whether it's Atletico Madrid or Lyon, you know, in the past when, you know, they had the whole chest thumping, we're winners, blah, 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 defend staunchly, none of this build up play and whatever. They weren't getting any further in Europe either, incidentally. So, no, I think they will go to the next round. And as far as winning it going till the very end, I think, and I said this before, Manchester City are an outstanding side. Bayern can be an outstanding side, and they showed it this last weekend. I don't know that there's any other team in Europe that is clearly head and shoulders, or at least team left in the Champions League, apart from those two, that is clearly head and shoulders above Juventus. So I think they would feel that they're in with a shot.
Of course, boys, before that, you've got Inter against Atalanta tomorrow, live on ESPN+. Such a big game, Matteo. You're going to be working on a Monday.
Yeah, and I can't wait because it's really a great chance for Atalanta to blow the title race wide open and for Inter to just keep that six-point lead. Inter's going to be basically full strength. I think Antonio Conte is going to put out his favorite 11. Just lost the background again, live TV. And Atalanta, ever since Papu Gomez has left the club, Dan, they haven't really missed the beat. They've been this more workman-like side. They've continued to get success. And they raise their game against the top sides in Serie A. They always seem like they can add an extra gear and they press you in the midfield. That battle is going to be great. And you know that Inter are going to find space over the top because Atalanta will play high, they will press, and Lukaku is going to be devastating on the counter as he so often is.
Gab, this is happening a lot now, and I feel there is some sort of product placement for a particular brand of television, and I would like to apologize.
I wish I was sponsored, but I'm not that big of a deal.
For some reason, Matteo feels he needs to use this opportunity to try and get free stuff. So we will try and move on from this extraordinary, unprofessional way. You can turn around, press the remote. It's all right, Matteo. You've got your bit in now.
I don't know where it is. That's a problem. I think I misplaced it. Oh, there it is. I got it right now. Here we go.
Look at Gab. Voilà. Gab, like an angry teacher.
Back in downtown Hartford, just like that. It's magic.
Gab, it should be a really, really good tie, shouldn't it?
Absolutely. And you'll notice my background says ESPN
yes.
London.
Yes, thank
that's
you very much,
live,
Gab. That's why you're chief writer.
That's why I want to try to promote. it's huge. It's huge from Inter's perspective because, you know, you look at where you think they can drop points between now and the end of the season. This is obviously one of those trap games for them. Atalanta have been flying. They don't seem to be affected by stuff that's going on around them. And I am so looking forward to this game helping settle who is the outstanding wing back in Serie A this season, Robin Gosens or Ashraf Hakimi.
Yeah, it's worth listening to the commentary just to listen to the product placement that will take place over the 90 minutes between Mark and Matteo. That game live, 2:45 Eastern there on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C-E-bikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure, though, to stay tuned. Frank and Nadim are back to answer your tweets on Extra Time. Stay with us. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Nadim and Frank are with us. Nadim, could you share one of the best memories with Manchester derbies during your days? It's your burner account, isn't it?
I think probably the one to commemorate the Munich disaster. We were heavy underdogs. It was a one-off shirt. It was a big emotional day. We were at Old Trafford. We were supposed to get rolled over. But we ended up winning. I think it was 2-1. And best of all, one of my old teammates, Darius Vassell, I think for every game that he scored in, he never lost. And I knew that stat. And at halftime, he'd scored and we were 2-0 up. And I was looking at him. He was looking at me. And we didn't say anything, but we kind of knew. And when the game finished, you know, we won the game 2-1. And I think his record remained throughout his career.
For the sake of balance, your worst memory of a Manchester derby?
Oh, gosh. Where to begin? I'd say probably when I was, as a player, I lost 3, but they used to just roll us over. Probably the worst one was 2010, I think, when it was the League Cup semi-final. And we had a lot of hope. We had anticipation of possibly getting to our first final in God knows how long. And then United won it late in that game. And it was kind of a false start for the club at that point. But looking at where they are now, I think that was the beginning of a better run for Manchester City.
Liverpool are having their struggles at the moment. We know that, Frank. However, this person is suggesting that Liverpool may need a new throwing coach to shake things up.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think club should stay to show that he can react with all teammates. And I don't see any other coach coming and changing the path that Liverpool is going on right now. And I don't feel that anybody can change what's it's kind of a curse right now. And so therefore, you know, I want club to stay.
Nadim, this goes back to the throwing coach taking credit during Liverpool's success over the last couple of years, a theory which has been very much poo-pooed by our very own Stevie Nicol. Would you welcome a throwing coach coming in and helping you?
To be honest, when I was playing, some of my teams were very bad at throw-ins, but the fact of the matter is it doesn't help you put the ball on the goal essentially. So I think as far as throwing coaches taking credit for stuff, I think it's a prime example that you should maybe just keep quiet and let other people tell you how good you are instead of you telling others how much value you actually have.
Frank, maybe you could have tried that during your career.
No, leave me alone. Tell me, I didn't know, because I saw Nadim with a Manchester City shirt,
yes.
You know, showing to the world that
he's
really cheering that blue club. Are we allowed to say whether we support a team? Like for me, it will be, for example, Chelsea, or are we
know
not
you
to?
Support Chelsea. You say to. We all the time. It's not a surprise, is it? You don't have to wear a Chelsea shirt.
Yeah, okay. So, but we have to be I mean we have to be clear, you know,
yeah,
very
no,
clear.
That's, that,
so
we that, that's
I can
clear,
wear
yeah.
I can come to the show with a Chelsea shirt.
Yeah, that's
I can
fine.
Come
yeah.
to the show to the
you,
Chelsea.
You played for Chelsea won the FA oh. Cup and Nadim played for Manchester City before they got good. That's pretty much where we are. Right.
They got good as soon as I left. That's a fact.
That's true. Me too, Nadim. Don't worry.
Have the guys ever been in a club where the president is starting to go through a lot of drama and the board, like with Barcelona? What kind of impact does this have on the manager and the player?
So at first club, which I won't name because you know who it is, Dan, I'm sure, we had an owner who was potentially going to get locked up in Thailand in Taksin Shinawatra, and he came in with a lot of really good ideas, and it sounded like the club was progressing. But then all of a sudden you're hearing that his assets are going to be frozen and he's going to be deported and all this stuff. So you kind of start to wonder. And looking back now, having spoken to people who had control then,
yeah,
there were a few players and deals which had to go a certain way. Otherwise, the club might not have even continued to exist. So yeah, I'd say Shinawatra was definitely an owner who affected the manager, the players, and overall the football club. But thankfully, you know, they managed to move on without him.
Wow. Frank, did you have any situation where what was going on the board was affecting what was going on the pitch?
Yeah, so when I left Chelsea, I went to Marseille, and it was kind of a big mess where I had one training session with a coach who signed me, Tomislav Ivic. First day, he say welcome. And after the training session, he said goodbye. I don't know why I'm sacked, but I'm sacked. and we went through three chairmen during the season and four or five coaches.
Wow.
The first season. And I was the captain of the team. And that was very fun. That was really fun. That was something.
Frank, what was that like? Because we know what the Marseille fans are like. Like, just going out to a restaurant, going to a bar, could you do that sort of stuff?
I was living far away. I was living in Aix-en-Provence, which is like 45 minutes away from Marseille. And no, it's impossible to live. Well, at my time, it was impossible to live in Marseille, down Marseille. You cannot go out. I went one day on the main street, and I was to pretend that I was on the phone because people wanted to take pictures or sign or talk to me. And Marseille, they're very, you know, Latin. So they want you to come to the bar and drink with them and right. talk about football for hours. So they're very nice people, but we're not allowed to do so. So I was living in the countryside, yeah.
Nadim, forget Lewandowski. If you could pick a player from Bayern to build your team around, who would you choose?
Ah, oh, that's a good question. Finally, yeah, good question from you.
I don't make any of these questions. I don't sit here.
I retract my compliment. I retract my compliment. Still no good question from you. I would say, oh, that's so tough.
You know.
What's the answer, Frank? What's the answer?
The captain, Neuer. You have to take Neuer.
We can't build a team around a goalkeeper, Frank. He's not playing
up
front, is he?
He's the same age as me, and I'm retired, so no chance of building a team around him.
Kimmich.
Yeah.
Kimmich,
yes.
Maybe?
I'd say Kimmich, yeah.
Yeah.
Kimmich, yeah. Very good player. That's the one for me.
Nadim, Lewandowski or Ronaldo right now?
Oh, come on.
I have to say Lewandowski, but purely because he's probably a little bit younger, so there's more to come. Lewandowski is the right answer.
Frank?
Yes, I would go. Ronaldo is exceptional, but the present is with Lewandowski, and I guess the future will still be for Lewandowski in the next 5 years.
Nathan, what was it like going up against Cristiano Ronaldo?
Thankfully, I never really got to face prime time Ronaldo.
Right.
But he was always very special when he was at the other side of Manchester. And it was incredible. And I think looking back, once his career's finished and Messi's career's finished, I hope we can actually take stock of how good they are instead of just pitting them against each other. Because what we've seen now, we might never see again in our lifetime. So to look at somebody that scored hundreds of goals, and I think, is it 300 goals or something since he turned 30?
Mm-hmm.
I think that says an awful lot about his talent level. So what's it like? Very difficult. Have I managed to stop him? Just one time and we won. But, you know, I don't want to talk about that.
Oh, that's a first. Frank, did you ever come across anyone called Ronaldo?
Yes. And you know when, you know exactly the day. And it was in 98, but it wasn't the same Ronaldo that we are talking about, you know.
No.
That was somebody exceptional. Somebody exceptional as well.
But you had him in his pocket, your pocket, all game, Frank.
Yeah, he's still in it.
Yeah. Can I ask a question, please, Dan?
You want to ask a question, Nadim? Go on, then. Better be good.
Yes, please. Yeah, this is for my idol, Frank. Thank you. Can I ask you a question, please? So we saw recently Ibrahimovic said that he prefers old Ronaldo to this current Ronaldo. What's your preference? Which who do you think is better?
I think the new Ronaldo is better than the old Ronaldo for me. I mean, he has everything. And on top of it, the old Ronaldo has been injured many times during his career, where, you know, you take the statistics, you take the goal that they both scored, you know, there is no comparison, no possible comparison. What Cristiano Ronaldo does for the whole career long is absolutely exceptional. And you say, you know, you were talking about Messi and him, they absolutely aliens for me in the world of football nowadays. And the old Ronaldo, or the only one, Ronaldo, the number nine, was exceptional, and I had the chance to play only once against him. But I talked to Yuri Djorkaeff, who played with Inter, or Zidane, who played with him, or when he was playing for Real Madrid. They say that the guy had everything, but I didn't play enough to compare those two or to see, because I didn't play against Cristiano Ronaldo, and I played only once against Ronaldo. But when I see what they can do, I think Cristiano Ronaldo was more complete than the other one. I might be wrong, because we are talking about the top of the top. Mm. But yeah, I will go for Cristiano Ronaldo.
Let's go down from the top, shall we? Can Lille hold off PSG and Lyon to the end in Ligue 1, Frank?
Yes, they can. They can, because I think Paris Saint-Germain is not perfect this season, and they've been exceptional against Barcelona lately, but they were capable of losing four days after against Monaco at home. So I think Lille is capable of holding up, especially because they're out of the Champions League as well, and therefore I think they can carry on and be the possible champion next summer. But you know, those teams, they are there because the top level drop dramatically for me. Mm. That's the only reason. And we see that in every championship in Europe.
Who does Nadim think was the best Premier League player of the last decade? Oh, that's easy.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it? The last decade? Oh my goodness. I'll keep it safe. I'll say Sergio Aguero. That's the guy for me.
And
he's been special.
And what about no Manchester City players, it says?
Okay, no Manchester City players.
He doesn't know.
I don't really know. I don't know many of the players in the league. That's a tough question. I think in this last decade, you see what Man City have actually done. They've been probably the most successful team. So I'd have to go there. And yeah, I think Frank could probably back me up as well. I need a bit of support, Frank. Please help me.
Well, yeah, I love Aguero. Can we pick somebody who didn't play too many games in the last decade? I mean, I'm talking about Drogba. I'm talking about Lampard and those players, John
Chelsea
Terry.
Players.
Well, of course, they're all Chelsea players. I will put somebody that I think nobody will think about. It's Henderson. Henderson is the main player for Liverpool, and if Liverpool won the last 2 years, it's because of the captain.
Yeah, but
I'm fed up, you know, with strikers. I don't want to talk about strikers anymore.
Okay, all right then. Frank, what is the... Now, this comes from a famous quote from Andy Gray, who used to play and then went as a commentator on Sky, saying he's not sure about Lionel Messi and if he could do it on a rainy night away in Stoke. Frank, what is the French version of can he do it on a cold, rainy night in Stoke?
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
So basically, they're looking for a comparison in France to where it was a real test, yeah. Where you wouldn't want to go away. Stoke is windy, it's cold, it's a horrible, raw environment. Where in France would be similar to that?
That would be maybe in Brittany.
Yes.
Brest. If you go there, yeah, because you can have the wind, you can have the rain. It's cold.
Good. Right. what was Nadim's pre-match meal?
Poor. you know, I got to a stage where it didn't really matter. I thought for a while that it was very specific. You had to have this, had to have that. And then, no, just went out the window. There was a point where we had two games in 3 days. And the coach said, if you play in the first game, you won't play in the second game. So I played in the first game. I was all professional with the pasta, the salmon, all that stuff. Played in the first game, did fine. Then I downed tools, I stopped. I basically just ate whatever I wanted for the next 2 days. And then the day of the next game, the manager came and said, right, you're playing again in the next game. So I was the least prepared I've ever been. And I played better in game two than I did in game one. So from that point, I decided,
anything goes.
It's whatever I'm in the mood for, whatever I'm in the mood for.
Frank, just going back to the World Cup final, could you eat on that day? You must be nervous.
Of course, I had French crepes. In the morning for breakfast with Zinedine Zidane, very diet. And then, I had lunchtime. I had, I guess some fish or some meat with pastas. And I even had a big nap of 2 hours, chilled out. I surprised myself. But I was 30 years old. I was able to cope with the situation.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll be back tomorrow for more reflecting on Chelsea against Everton, plus, of course, that big game in Italy as well. It is
Blues!
Atalanta against Inter Milan. Big Inter fan is Frank.